Pavel Navratsky fought only one day in the Russian army in World War II before he was captured by the Nazi invaders and occupiers of his native Ukraine. One day he was captured and soon he was set free to go back to his village, the Ukrainian village of Sarovhensty. There he lived a somewhat normal life for wartime years until when in 1944 the Third Reich was broken and Russia was free and the Russian army was coming back to his village. He was afraid of what would happen to him, and so he hid in the barn behind his house in that little Ukrainian village. Hid there in 1944, and except for late one dark night, came out not again until 1985. So he stayed in that barn for 41 years. The one time he did venture out, it was only for a few minutes. Late at night, it was dark. He was disguised in a woman's clothing. He didn't get very far before he panicked and retreated to the place where he was holed up as a recluse. Three times a day, his wife, who worked in the local commune, brought food and stuffed it through a hole in the barn wall so that he was able to live. His wife died earlier this year, and as a result of that death, the people in the community who thought that Pavel had long been dead discovered that, in fact, he was alive. They found him in the barn, a pale, ghost-like figure of 74 years of age, a man who had a beard down to his waist, who was dressed in rags. Pavel Navratsky had had a life, what must have been a tortuous, difficult life, without peace, in a place where there was no war going on. Now, as I read his story in the front page of last Sunday's newspaper, I couldn't help but think, oh, if only he could have discovered and known the marvelous truth of the benediction of 2 Thessalonians 3:16. Now may the Lord of peace himself give you peace at all times, in all ways. The Lord be with you all. What wonderful words. Wonderful words not just for some Russian pathetic recluse, but for us as well. It's a message from God for wartime and for peacetime, for distant places and near places, for other people and for us people too. To live in peace. That's what God calls us to, and that's what he offers to us. In this little benediction, there are three alls to this peace that God calls us to experience. It's all the Lord's. That is, the peace that comes to us is all from God. He's called the Lord of peace. The Lord of peace himself give you peace. In some ways, that seems kind of wordy. I would guess that if Paul were writing in 1985 and had to depend upon modern printing presses rather than on those who would, as authors, copy over the manuscripts, then in all probability he would have an editor, and the editor would say, no, that's too wordy. Why don't you just say, God give you peace? But it's a good thing it wasn't edited, because there's some truth in that. The Lord of peace himself give you peace. You see, to understand and receive the peace of the Lord, we must first understand and receive the Lord of peace. That's more than a play on words. It's a significant truth. The word that's used here in Greek is the Greek word eirene, a very common word that means peace. Way, way back, even before the time of the first century in classical Greek, they used the word in a different way than they ended up using it. You know, words sort of evolved through the times of a language. Originally, in those Greek city-states when there were constant wars or almost constant wars, there were brief interludes that were called peace. And they called that eirene. So eirene was really the absence of war. But by the time the New Testament was written, and particularly the way the word is used within the Bible, it has a somewhat, actually quite a different meaning. Eirene came to mean a prosperity of the heart, a prosperity of the inner person, a complete prosperity, a state of being that is good. Almost to the point then of saying that war is the absence of eirene. War is the absence of prosperity.
War is the absence of peace. Now, the scripture says that Jesus Christ is the Lord of Irene, is the war Lord of peace, that he's the boss, the master, the one in charge of quiet, of calm, of prosperity, of peace, that without him there is no such thing. Last January, I flew in a DC-3 over much of the South American nation of Colombia. Now, I don't know how old it was, but DC-3s haven't been made for, 30 or 40 years, so it's at least that old an aircraft. And halfway through the flight from Loma Linda, which is low and on the plains of Colombia, to Bogota, which is a mile and a half in altitude, the runway at 8,659 feet, I was invited by the crew to come up into the cockpit, to sit in the jump seat. I've flown before in a small aircraft, but never in a larger commercial-type aircraft had I ever flown in a cockpit before. So I got strapped in and put a headset on and then sort of watched and listened to all that went on. And if I let it, I could have thought it not only strange, but potentially unsettling, some of the things that happened. For example, the plane wasn't pressurized, so as we went up to go over the mountains, we had to have oxygen. And they gave me this tube to put in my mouth, and I've never done that before. I didn't even know whether to hold my nose. I didn't know exactly how I was supposed to use it, but I'll tell you, I sucked it out as best I could, figuring that was a pretty important thing for me to do. And I figured, that's okay. But then there's winds, you know, when you go over a mountain, and they're different when you look at them from the front than when you look at them out the side. Somehow, when a plane's going like this, and it sort of moves over to the left and then moves back over to the right, there's a sense, to me at least, that it shouldn't be doing those kinds of things, and kind of bumpy. And then communication with the Bogota Tower in Spanish. I don't speak Spanish. And, you know, there's no knowing what they're saying. They could be saying, "Hi, you all, come on in." Or they could be saying, there's a jet fighter if you're right wing and you're going to be shot down in 40 seconds. I would have smiled at either one. I have no idea what they're saying. And then we came in and we could see the city of Bogota and the runway, one runway at this international airport. No other options or choices or whatever. And other aircraft around, including a Boeing 707 from the Chilean airline that's sort of coming in close behind us. I found out later a little bit too close behind us. And all of these things going on. And I could have become distraught, not because things were wrong, but because I really just didn't understand all that was happening. But then I took a look at the pilot. Yeah, he was relaxed, kind of calm. He spoke Spanish, for which I was grateful. He seemed to understand all of these dials and levers and pedals, and he seemed to be doing them at all pretty much the right time. Nothing seemed to rattle him. The winds didn't seem to bother him. Any of the sounds were not too disturbing. He was in charge. He had everything under control. He was at peace. And as I looked at him, I relaxed. And I experienced the peace because I knew that he was in charge. Now, when we look out the window of our lives, it seems to me that we see a world out there that's pretty strange, kind of disconcerting, unsettling, crazy things, weird things. On the one hand, you can pick up the newspaper or you can watch it on television and you can become absolutely distraught. But you can get rid of your television and cancel your newspaper subscription and just get distraught over what's happening in your own life, in your own family, in your own job, all of the things around you. It's easy to get upset, uptight. It's easy to have a total lack of that prosperity of peace in the inner soul just by looking around at all that's happening. And when we do that, peace, if we've got it, slips away pretty quickly until we take a look at the Lord of peace. And we discover that he is aware of all of these winds, of all of these strange languages, of the mountains and the changes and the perplexities. And we look at him and he's calm. He's collected. He's in charge. He seems to understand it all. He seems to be able to put it all together. And as we look at him, we relax. Because we know that it's all the Lord's and that he is the Lord of peace. Now it's this Lord of peace, the boss, the master, the captain, the one in charge of peace, who gives to us the peace of the Lord. And he does it according to 2 Thessalonians 3:16, he himself puts the peace that he has in us so that it is a supernatural peace. That means it cannot be gotten from any other source. It is not a peace that is available at the treaty table in Geneva, and it is not a peace that is available through counseling or medication. It is not a peace that is available because we have some great successes in life or because the circumstances around us have been manipulated in our favor. It is the peace of God that becomes our peace. Just as sunshine is available only from the sun, so the peace of the Lord is only available from the Lord of peace. And what happens is that our inner state is set by the control of the captain rather than all the shutters of the plane and the winds on the outside or the lights of the runway. And the peace of the Lord means then an inner quiet, an inner prosperity, a calm and a confidence, no matter what is going on around us. And so those who know this peace can report that even in the fiercest and bloodiest battles of life, the peace of the Lord keeps us calm on the inside. It's all the Lord's. The Lord of peace giving to us the peace of the Lord. Now the verse goes on to explain that he does this all the time. Not in spurts. Ordinary human peace comes in spurts. So one minute you've got it, and the next minute you don't. And I think most of us understand pretty much the way that is. There can be marital strife in the relationship between a husband and a wife that has pretty much gone on for years. And then there are occasional interludes of marital bliss, and that is the peace that has come on occasion, sometimes unpredictably, as that spurt of peace. Or in the relationships in a family with children and parents. Sometimes there is continual conflict, and then fortunately there's a day, occasionally, when everybody gets along, and there is that spurt of peace for which we are grateful. Or there is the tension at work. For some people, work is really a tough experience. Every day they go, they're filled with tension, their blood pressure rises, they have physical maladies as a result of all this, they hate going there, they don't get along with people, they're under all of these different difficulties, but some days are okay. Every once in a while, things go all right, like holidays or when the boss is out of town or something like that happens. And there's that spurt of peace that kind of interrupts all the tension. It's that way internationally. We have wars going on all over. We have the Iran-Iraq war. We have the wars in Central America, the ongoing conflict between the Soviet Union and the patriots in Afghanistan. We have the horrible, irreconcilable, so it seems, war in the Middle East. We hear this past week on the news that one of the factions in Beirut called for a unilateral ceasefire and there was hope for a peace, and it lasted only a few hours. It was just a spurt, a little tiny spurt of peace. Now don't misunderstand me, we're grateful for that. Everyone is grateful for spurts of peace, and everyone yearns for more. But it doesn't take too many years of life till we begin to realize that war is the norm and the spurts of peace are the exception. But it isn't that way with the peace of the Lord. For his peace does not come in spurts. It comes in a continual flow. May the Lord of peace himself give you peace at all times. He never lets up. He never changes the pressure. He doesn't stop at night. He doesn't quit for holidays. He does not take vacations or time off. Jesus Christ gives a continual flow of peace to those who trust in him. It's kind of like the electricity that we have in our outlets, a more or less continual flow. And we've kind of taken that as the norm in our society, something that we're kind of spoiled in compared to many countries. Visit some of the third world countries and you find that the electricity is as unpredictable as the weather, or even more so. It may be on for days and then off for days or weeks. You never know when it's going to quit. You may invite guests for dinner only to find out that there's no electricity that night. And it's not very consistent. In a lot of countries, unlike our country where we have 110 volt, much of the world has 220 coming into their homes. They hope. sort of averages out to 220. One day it's 180, the next day it's 260. It's usually direct current. It's supposed to be, many countries, 50 cycles, but you never know about that either. One time it might be 80 cycles, the next day it may be 40 cycles, and that does a job on things like electric clocks. So 1 hour is sort of 38 minutes long when you sort of got a lot of electricity coming through and the cycles are fast. And it kind of is okay because the next hour sort of balances that out, and that's a different length. It does things to refrigerators. People in these countries get perishable foods, will get frozen food, and they put it in a freezer, and then it quits. So here you have all this meat. You have a big dinner that next day, and then the rest of it kind of spoils. People with computers in these third world countries where there are these surges, these spurts of electricity and inconsistencies, it just causes havoc with them. All these difficulties. Now, that's an inconvenience. But can you imagine when it's a life and death issue? I was thinking about this in terms of these artificial heart people, you know, like William Schrader. I imagine how you'd feel if you had an artificial heart that is plugged into the wall and you're not sure. I mean, you hear on the radio the electricity is going to be off for the next couple of days. Don't worry, it'll be back on again on Wednesday. And or else you see the light kind of flickering and you realize the electricity is going to go off and you've got about 30 seconds that your heart isn't going to work anymore. It's a life and death issue, this business of the spurts of electricity. It's kind of a life and death issue when it comes to the peace of our lives as well. We are being told here in 2 Thessalonians 3:16, that the peace of the Lord is at all times. There are no spurts. There are no interruptions. There are no irregularities. The peace of the Lord is absolutely dependable. It's always there. It's always the same. Whether we plug into it or not, that may be quite a different issue. And we've got all this electricity flowing consistently at 60 cycles and 110 volts and all of that into our homes. That doesn't mean that we plug into it and use it. And so it is with the peace of God. It is there at all times. Obviously, the thing to do is to go with the flow, to plug into it, to plug into the peace of the Lord from the Lord of peace that is at all times and always. Now may the Lord of peace himself give you peace at all times in all ways. Now, the word that we have translated in our Revised Standard Version of the Bible here as ways quite literally means turnings, although that wouldn't be the ordinary word that we would probably use. Turnings in the sense of life's conditions and the way they alter. I remember taking a graduate course once where we were given the assignment, I think with an overhead projector transparency, of drawing on an 8.5 by 11 inch space our lives, our life journey. Fascinating different things that people in the class did. And some people had a lot of circles and some had lines that went all over the place. I don't remember anyone in that class that had a straight line from point A to point B. And you probably wouldn't either. Because we find that if we map out our biographies, that there are all kinds of turnings. And that's the word that's here being used in this verse. There are things that we don't anticipate. You may not have anticipated that you would get married, but you met someone and you fell in love and you agreed to get married, and so that was a turning. Or maybe you never anticipated that you would get divorced. You figured that the day of your marriage was the day of a relationship that would last the rest of your life. And if you were to map out your biography, you would change the color of the ink and you would draw a line in a very different direction when there was that fork in the road that came at divorce. Or maybe you never anticipated that you would be a parent. Maybe you didn't plan to be, and there was an unexpected pregnancy, and a child was born, and that was a whole new turning that wasn't anticipated. Or maybe you anticipated that you would be a parent, and the child was never born, or the child died. Turnings. All kinds of turnings. Maybe you were headed on a career in a certain direction, and you prepared for that, and you told everyone, that's what I'm going to do, and that's where I'm going to live, and that's how much money I'm going to make. And it was all kind of figured out years and years ago. And you took a detour that you never anticipated, and you ended up over here when you started going over there. All of the turnings of life. Maybe you thought you'd be healthy always, but then there was a turning of cancer. But then another turning of a remission. New careers, different places, new friends, accidents, serendipities. When all kinds of things came together, you could never explain it. other than it's absolutely marvelously brought about by the providence of God. People and times and places and money and resources, a combination undreamed of that couldn't have been concocted by human imagination. And that point in your life, it all came together, and there was a marvelous turning in a direction that has just been for the best for you and everyone around you. Now, what we often try to do is we try to take the steering wheel of our lives and we say, all right, that's the direction that I'm going, and I'm going to steer on a straight course, and I don't care if the road bends or not. Well, you find out you can't do that. Because when the road bends, you have a choice of bending with the road and taking the choices that are there. Or you can wreck your automobile and find disaster. What happens then is those turnings, particularly the turnings that we would never choose, the turnings become churnings inside of us. They twist us until we have an unrest that is anything but peace. We become upset, so churned inside and out that there is no peace unless we have the peace of the Lord from the Lord of peace that is for all the time and for all the turnings, for all the ways. That's what he's offering, peace that is for all of the turnings. You see, the Lord's peace is not dependent upon the ways. Is not dependent upon the turning of circumstance in our lives. His peace is good for every circumstance, for every turning. Remember that Old Testament character, Job? Hey, I'll tell you, he had it made. He really, really had it made. He was rich. He was popular. He had everything going for him. He was a godly spiritual man. The premier, if people could be rated spiritually, in all of the world. I suppose if he had his overhead projector and has transparency there, and he was drawing the map of his life, he would have to choose gold ink in the pen, because that's what it was. And it would be a straight and a wide and a thick and a strong line until one day. One day when one of his messengers came, actually four came, but the first one said to him, the Sabaeans attacked. And when they attacked, they killed your livestock, and they killed all of your servants except for me, and I'm the one that came to report it. But before he finished his report, another servant showed up and said, Job, have you heard? Fire came down from heaven, and it killed all your sheep. And the guy had a lot of sheep. That was where wealth was measured in those days. Killed all your sheep and all the servants who were taking care of your sheep. It was catastrophe upon catastrophe. And that guy hadn't finished his report until a third guy came, another servant, and said, the Chaldeans came. They invaded. They stole all your camels, and they killed all the rest of your servants except for me, and I'm the only one that got away, and I'm the one who's giving you the report. And the guy he's destroyed. He's lost everything. His gold line isn't gold anymore. His wealth has all disappeared. His rank and position are gone. Then a fourth servant shows up and says, oh, Job, you know the wind that whirled through? Well, it collapsed the house that your children were in. They were all eating dinner there together. And the wind took off the roof and it collapsed the walls in, and all 10 of them are dead. Just a few minutes. You know that gold line? It turned a cold, bitter black. And it turned a completely different direction. You know what Job said? He said, naked I came from my mother's womb, naked shall I return. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And I'll tell you, that's not a normal response. When you lose all your money, when you lose all your friends, when every one of your kids is killed in an accident, you don't typically turn around and say, blessed be the name of the Lord. That was a superhuman. No, that was a supernatural response. Unless someone has the peace of God, you can't have that kind of response. A response that is for all the turnings of life, the bad ones and the good ones, at all times and in all ways. When life's turnings are unexpected and are difficult, those turnings need not become the churnings that rob the peace away. If we accept the gift of the Lord of peace himself, who gives to us peace at all times and in all ways. And as the apostle then says, the Lord be with you all.